This is not really Conor McGregor, but you are listening to Top Turtle, Episode 3. We're not here to take part. We're here to take over. I predict these things.
All right, we are rolling. I am David Tremonti, your co-host, and with me as always, Daniel Gumby Vreeland. Gumby, how are you today?
I was a little bit better before I heard the news a second ago.
Yeah, I gotta say, I feel thrown off right now. I'm off my game.
So just for the viewers at home, literally 15 minutes ago, I broke the news to my co-host, Dave, here. We had previously already heard a few days ago about Cain Velasquez, but as we were walking into the studio today, Fabricio Werdum dropped out of the UFC 196 headliner, which was now against Stipe Miocic for the heavyweight title. And that leaves us kind of scratching our heads here.
We're recording this on Monday afternoon. By the time the show drops, as the kids say, maybe this will be sorted out, but just honest first reactions are the heavyweight division's a mess.
Yeah, I logically can't think of anything the UFC can do to A, piece together a headliner for that card other than promoting Hendricks Thompson, which isn't a headliner.
And they don't, yeah, they usually will not do a pay-per-view that isn't a title fight as the headliner unless it's like a massive, massive, like Silva-Diaz super fight.
Yeah, and this is clearly not that. In addition to that, like, I can't think of anybody else who Stipe could fight.
I mean, I don't want to go crazy with the potential matchmaking because the odds are they just scrap the heavyweight title fight altogether. But if they wanted to do a heavyweight interim title fight, and again, we're talking about this on Monday, so don't come back to us on Wednesday and make fun of us. We're just going to go through the possibilities here. You have, Overeem. He's a free agent.
He would have to sign very quickly, although this could be incentive for him to sign really quickly.
Yeah, this could be incentive for him to sign.
Yeah, if you told Overeem you get a title shot in a week from now, if you sign on the dotted line for five fights, you might just bait him into doing it.
All right, but he's a free agent, so not even technically under contract with the UFC. And then Travis Brown just beat Matt Mitrione.
Yeah, but going 13 minutes, you got to wonder how beat up he is, whether or not he's got one of those suspensions. I didn't check the suspensions list. I know sometimes even guys who win have, 30 days, no contact.
Yeah, correct, yeah. True. Okay. We know Matt Mitrione has to be on a no contact list. He's getting surgery on his broken orbital bone, and he lost.
Freaky, freaky, freaky eye.
And then, JDS just got knocked out.
Yeah, if he's not on suspension, I'd be surprised too. Big knockout there too.
Okay, so here's just playing matchmaker again, looking at the schedules. You do have a heavyweight fight set for this Saturday, UFC on Fox, and that is Ben Rothwell versus Josh Barnett. Do you pull one of those two gentlemen out and have him fight Stipe for an interim title of some sort?
I mean, I think you might be able to pull one of them out, but I'm not sure you could pull one of them out for a title fight and have it be like, have any prestige behind it. You know,
Rothwell is on a listen, I'd pull out Rothwell before I'd pull out Barnett because he is on a three-fight win streak.
But that being said, and we're going to get to the preview of that card in just a little bit. But that being said, I fully expect Josh Barnett to demolish it.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you take the guy who's an underdog in a fight and be like, yeah, let's give him the interim title shot? I mean, Jared Rochalt's on a four-fight win streak.
I was going to say Roy Nelson, just as a name, but
Nelson's on a two-fight losing streak, right? Is that not correct?
Yeah, because he just lost to Barnett, and I can't remember who he lost to right before that.
So here's just a fun name I'm going to throw out there, and then we'll kind of put a pin in this because, like you said, it might be sorted out by then. Vitaly Minnikov, the former Bellator heavyweight champ, still technically the Bellator heavyweight champ. I know he's having some contract stuff going on. He's fought for a couple of promotions that are not Bellator. He's a killer. It would be interesting to see them pull over and have him fight Stipe. Because I think, to be honest, he could beat Stipe. So it would be a fun fight.
The way I look,
but not for a title.
Right. I was just going to say, the way I look at that in a vacuum, it sounds great. If it was the third fight from the top on a pay-per-view, or maybe even the co-main event, I could get behind it. I mean, listen, Patrick Cummins on short notice fought Daniel Cormier in a co-main event when Rashad Evans pulled out last February. But for the main event, yeah, no.
It's brutal.
It's brutal. So We'll find out what happens. You know, it's going to be determined. The other fight that was just announced, which is actually fun and something everyone was excited about instead of the big bummer of Werdum pulling out of his title fight next weekend, in the welterweight division, it was just announced that
Matt the Immortal Brown
will fight Damian Maia.
Yeah, and I like that matchup for a couple of reasons. One is it's a nice fight for Maia, who hasn't fought that guy who I think can stop his takedowns. You know, because Gunnar Nelson, great grappler, takedown defense a little suspect. And you saw that with Rick Story as well, when Rick Story pressured him. So this gives Maia somebody who's a high-level guy who could probably stop one or two of his takedowns, and we can see whether or not he can. And that's the really exciting part of that. The other exciting part of that is the talk I'm hearing, you know, and I'm hearing it from various sources, people close to the UFC, people who think they know things. The other talk of welterweight matchups that I'm seeing is I see Carlos Condit with a suggested fight in like the July range with Nick Diaz.
Okay. I think that's awesome. Yeah. If that's true. Now, I saw an article recently that Condit, and this could just be negotiations, what have you, he said the only fight he could see himself getting excited for was a Lawler rematch. But you know what? Nick Diaz would be a money fight. They had a great fight 2 years ago.
Yeah, and I think the rematch there, Diaz would be all over it. And the other thing I'm hearing about is I'm hearing from sources closer to Woodley's camp that Woodley has been told that he's getting the Wonderboy Thompson and Hendricks winner.
Yeah, okay, so now that actually makes me angry because we've had two podcasts here and I've wanted to make a mental note to say this so it was on recorded tape. But when they announced in November, I think it was, that Woodley was just going to get the next title shot when Hendricks failed to make weight, I knew in the back of my head that is not how the UFC operates. You do not just get a title shot because someone missed weight. And I knew they were going to make him sing for his supper and fight someone else. That makes all the sense in the world to me. And both matchups excite me. I think that'd be great.
But I think what we're missing there is the most exciting part of these three matchups that I'm hearing about. And I've heard them from a couple of different places. Well, and maybe it's
wait,
just...
So it was Condit versus Nick Diaz, and then it was Woodley versus the winner of Hendricks or Wonderboy Thompson.
Brown and Maia.
Oh, and Brown and Maia, which was just official.
Right? Yep, so we've got one official matchup, two that are being heavily talked about, and it could just be sources throwing them back and forth, back and forth, and right. back and forth. What does that leave you for Lawler? Think about it.
GSP.
GSP, yeah, exactly. And that's what makes me really excited, and maybe I'm just reading all the sources and hearing rumors bounce back and forth. And I'm just feeling it. I'm getting excited. And here I am being the asshole who's perpetuating it. But
no,
man, I hope it's true.
I think you're on it. And if you Google, I was just trying to, because I was thinking of this the other day. I told you, sometimes I go to dark corners of the internet. This was not a dark corner of the internet, but I Googled Fariz Zahabi's name. And if you do news, there was like a random article in early January, I want to say it was, where Fariz said GSP is going to announce there would be some sort of splash. And, you know, I think he's coming back, so...
Especially with, you know, I thought that they would try to get a big, like, football audience to announce that it was coming back. Now, the Super Bowl, not on Fox, right? That's on...
I think it's on... Is it on NBC this year?
I think it's on CBS, but okay. But who knows? Apparently, we're not big enough football fans here. Some sort of platform like that, though. You know, pregame shows.
Yeah, and it makes there's something very, to me, symmetrical about it, and there's a synergy to the fact that he was the co-headliner of 100. So to bring him back for 200...
would just be wild.
Right, and you're not going to get Brock Lesnar, so let's get GSP.
God, I wish we could get Brock. Hey, I wonder what Brock's doing this weekend.
Yeah, seriously. Could Brock take short notice? I know he was at the WWE Royal Rumble last weekend. Yeah. I don't think he's too banged up.
He looked like he was in shape there. Maybe we could get Brock to come back.
Speaking of wacky, you know, I'm thinking on this right now while we're talking. What about John Bones Jones for the UFC 196 headliner on short rest as a heavyweight? Because we all know he's jacked right now.
Yeah, weird that you mentioned that. Wasn't a thought going through my head, but yeah, I would say you could definitely put that together.
I mean, listen, I tweeted this out over the weekend to my dozens and dozens of followers that if Connor can decide just to move up in weight class when he wants to, why can't John Bones Jones do it?
I would say there's no reason he wouldn't have to worry about making weight. He does look massive. Stipe Jones would probably sell pay-per-views.
I'd buy it.
Yeah. Other option out there, our guest today, Mark Hunt, while we won't get to ask him any questions about it because it's a pre-taped interview,
And Hunt took a short notice fight when Kane pulled out of the first Verdum fight. So,
full circle right there. It's certainly fun to watch under any circumstances.
You know, I'm going through my Twitter account right now, and what most of the Twitter universe is also saying is Mighty Mouse to save the day. He always comes in on short notice, but that is a zero buys for me. I'm not one of those anti-Mighty Mouse guys, but on short notice, as the savior to what I was super hyped up about for Stipe's shot at the heavyweight title,
I think if they do that, if they go Mighty Mouse, that goes from a pay-per-view that I see at a restaurant, then when Kane flop drops out, becomes Stipe, a pay-per-view that I buy because I like Stipe, if it goes to Mighty Mouse, I don't want to be mean, but...
You're following it online.
I'm probably following it online, yeah, or like... hoping I'm at a restaurant when it happens, watching the prelims religiously, and then, you know, finding out later, watching the replays. I don't know.
I do have to say, I love Fight Pass. Like, love Fight Pass. Best $10 I spend every month. The fact that they put those pay-per-views on about exactly 1 month later does make it easier to skip pay-per-views for me now.
Yeah.
And I haven't really, but it's, like, been in the back of my head.
That's, like, easier, too.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sage Northcutt.
The subscription service Sage Northcutt built. All right, so you know what's funny, Gumby? We didn't even set up the show because we were so excited about the breaking news with Verdum pulling out. And wait a minute, I have to say one more thing. Verdum pulling out because it was Stipe kind of ruffles my feathers a little bit.
Yeah, so that's the quote I'm seeing. Again, that could be taken out of context.
It could have been, but from what we're seeing, and again, we were caught flat-footed here, but apparently he said he would have stayed in if it was Kane. But because it wasn't Kane anymore, he pulled out because it was Stipe. So Stipe gets doubly screwed.
Classic Stipe.
Always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
I'm going to wait to hear a little bit more about that before I like say something definitive.
Okay, so on the show, which I'm super hyped about, we have an interview with Mark Hunt.
Yeah, and he's a little bit of a quieter guy, but we get him talking and even laughing a little bit. You'll enjoy the end of that interview for sure.
And then we have half an interview with Mike Jackson, don't call him Michael Jackson, who will be facing Mickey Gall next week at the pay-per-view for the chance to face CM Punk, CM Punk title, if you will.
Yeah, and you heard right, guys. We have half an interview. So Gumby's got to take the bullet on this one. I am going to apologize ahead of time. So
audio malfunction.
My good man, Dave Tremonti over here, who is the technical head behind all of this. I'm the brains. He's the technical.
That's a sad state of affairs when I'm the technical guru, but keep going.
So he's the technical guy. He usually makes sure when I'm doing all of my interviews that the sound quality is good and everything's going. He was out of town for my interview with Mike Jackson, and very, very, very sadly, I forgot to press the record button until about halfway through. So,
we've all been there.
Yeah. So, and we have all been there. I've actually heard a couple of other podcasts.
Oh, I've definitely heard it on other podcasts. There have definitely been other audio malfunctions. So don't beat yourself up too much, Gumby. We're going to do a breakdown of the main card of UFC on Fox. Cut to our interviews, and then when we come back from the interviews, we'll break down the rest of the card. And also, kind of a fun little game we'll play is, what is the one weight, if you could only watch one weight class for the rest of your life, what's the weight class you watch? We'll both give our answers.
That one's already got me scratching my head. I'm going to be thinking about it while we play the interviews.
Good. So, Gumby, let's do the breakdown of the main card. You know, I want to break down this main card, but we can't do it on our own. We need someone to help bring the listeners the UFC on Fox breakdown.
So, luckily for you, these breakdowns are brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards. That's SISUGuard.com. Sisu Mouthguards, they're the most breathable, lightweight mouthguards you could possibly ask for. Me and Dave are actually heading to Open Mat right after we finish this show. We're both going to pop in our Sisu Mouthguards, which are extremely comfortable. We wear them every time we roll, and we'll be popping over to the gym and throwing those babies
strapped up with our Sisu Mouthguards, just like a couple of bosses. All right, so let's go to the main card, UFC on Fox. Main event is Anthony Rumble Johnson, the -350 favorite, versus Ryan Darth Bader, a +265 underdog. Rumble's coming in 2-1 in his last three. He KO'd Jimmy Manoa back in September. Of course, lost to Cormier for the title after the whole Jon Jones debacle. And the last January, actually, 1 year ago, KO'd Gustafsson in Sweden. Bader is on a three-fight win streak, Gumby. He beat Rashad Evans by decision. He beat Phil Davis by decision. And beat OSP by decision. How do you see this one playing out?
So I'm actually going to give you a chance to win your Cruz Dillashaw dollar back.
You like Bader?
I like Ryan Bader in this fight, and I know that I'm in the minority of that. He's a plus 300 underdog. That's $3 for every one you bet on this one. I think he's a good play because if you look at the weaknesses from Rumble Johnson, his weaknesses are in his wrestling game. You know, he's definitely better puncher than Bader. Dangerous knockout power. And I think everybody is high on Rumble because of his ability to knock anybody out.
So I'm not going to take you up on the dollar bet, and I'll tell you why. And not just the wrestling ability, but cardio to me, too. You know, to me, it's like if Bader survives the first, let's call it, round and a half, I think he wins the fight. Or Johnson's just going to catch him and fight's over in the first round and a half. I'm not going to put a dollar on it or any amount of money. Just because of that fact, I do not think that Rumble would survive a grind him out five round fight.
Yeah, and I think that's the key too here, that this is a 5-round fight. If Rumble can't put him away, what's going to happen? And my question is, who can put Ryan Bader away? And the answer has been only people who have submitted him, right? Because John Jones tapped him out years and years and years ago. Tito Ortiz submitted him by guillotine choke, but nobody's knocking this man out except for, the one time he ran into Machida's fist like a telephone pole.
Right.
But he's not a very easy guy to hit. He's very good at avoiding it. He's fallen into a couple of submissions once, and he got drawn into trying to fight a karate fighter. Rumble isn't the type of guy who's going to frustrate you. Rumble's the type of guy who's going to stand in front of you and try to hit you. And I don't think that's going to bode too well for an opponent – Like Bader.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's a very good breakdown. Now, I have to take issue with one thing about this fight, which is they've basically said that with a win, Bader would get the title shot. But I assume that's really after Jones versus Cormier.
I would have to assume. I mean, unless Jones steps in and saves this weekend.
Right. Unless something funky happens. But here's my problem with this. This is like one of the more lackluster, I guess you could call it, number one contender fights to me, because I don't view Bader as someone who could beat either Cormier or Jones. So it's almost like he wins this weekend, and then I'm just like, all right, I'll watch, but he's not going to beat Cormier or Jones, in my opinion.
I think the reason that is, too, is that wrestling. So we talked about his wrestling being his most dangerous weapon and why he could likely beat somebody like Anthony Rumble Johnson. And the problem with that being his best thing is it's not better than Jones.
Right.
It's not better than Cormier.
No. So What are we left?
Do you box John Jones?
No,
you don't box John Jones if you're Ryan Bader. That's silly. He has to try to ground him out. And if Cormier couldn't take John Jones down, Ryan Bader definitely can't take John Jones
down. And then you look at it. I know they didn't say with a win Rumble is going to get a shot, but he is actually ranked higher than Bader right now. So let's just say for argument's sake that Rumble does win. And then it's like, all right, so Cormier Jones, if Cormier wins, we've already seen Cormier Rumble. We know how that song goes. So the only thing you're left with is hopefully Jones, which was the original fight before all the stuff went down with Jones's car accident, Jones versus Rumble.
Well, the one thing I will say that makes it more intriguing if Rumble does win, and again, I told you I don't think he's going to, but if he does win, I think the thing that makes that more interesting is he's got that crazy one-touch knockout power.
Right.
And all he would have to do is get his hands on somebody. I mean, do you think he's a better fighter than Alexander Gustafsson?
No, I don't.
I don't think so either. But he beat him.
But he beat him, man.
Yeah,
good
exactly.
Point.
So I think he's more intriguing as a title fight. I don't think he's going to be the one to get it.
Agreed. All right, then we move to the heavyweight offering on the main card. And again, we're taping this on Monday. For all we know, one of these two fighters might get pulled into the main event of UFC 196 to save the show. But that is Big Ben Rothwell, the plus 115 underdog facing Josh Barnett, who's a minus 135 favorite. Rothwell is on a 3-fight win streak. He subbed Matt Mitrione, he knocked out the Ream, and he knocked out Brendan Vera. Barnett is 2-1 in his last three. Gritty decision win against Roy Nelson in Japan, lost to Travis Brown on some vicious elbows, and he KO'd Frank Mir, and that was his first fight back in the UFC. So he is 2-1 in the UFC since his return. How do you see this one going down?
I'm going with Barnett. He's the favorite here, and he's the favorite for a reason. He's deeper than Rothwell, I think. And Rothwell, you can't fault him because he's won some fights I didn't think he was going to win. I didn't think he was going to beat Overeem. I didn't think he was going to beat Mitrione. But he went out there and he beat both of them. You don't want to say, lucky,
because, you know, you don't win two or three fights in a row because of luck. Overeem was on a kick where he was getting knocked out by everybody and their cousin.
Right.
The Mitrione submission, we talked about it last week, too.
Meathead being Meathead. Meathead.
So weird. So if those are the two things I have from Rothwell and being like, oh, yeah, I can't wait to see him bash somebody's head in again or front choke him with his belly button, you know, like, I don't see him as dangerous as Josh Barnett.
He's not going to tap Josh Barnett.
No, he's definitely not going to tap Josh Barnett. Josh Barnett's game is so much better on the ground. And Josh Barnett is also, unlike some of those other fighters that he fought, very suffocating. Right. And I think he's going to push forward, and I think that's going to be trouble for Ben Rothwell.
Okay, no argument here. So the next fight, you have Airy Alcantara. This is a bantamweight fight. He is the +150 underdog. Is he the underdog?
He is the underdog.
Well, that's so weird.
And that is really weird because I know what you're going to say. He's ranked 11, right? And Jimmy Rivera, who he's fighting.
Yeah, -170 favorite.
Yeah, and I completely agree with the odds makers. Jimmy Rivera is a killer. I watched him at World Series of Fighting 5. Nice plug for World Series of Fighting 5. I was live. That was headlined by Arlovsky versus... I wish I could remember who he was fighting. Mike Kyle. He was fighting Mike Kyle at World Series of Fighting 5. And Jimmy Rivera fought on the undercard of that. And I watched him and I was like, man, this guy is fast. He is extremely, extremely fast. And it's not the kind of fast like Cruz is fast where you know he's going to keep hitting you, but you'll probably be fine. It is, he's going to hit you and it is going to hurt instantly.
He's 2-0 in the UFC with a knockout over Marcus Brimage.
Yeah, and very, very impressive knockout over Marcus Brimage. And as good as Alcantara is, because, you know, he put in a hell of a performance against Faber in Boston a few years ago, I don't think he can deal with the speed and strength of Jimmy Rivera. And I think you're going to have a new bantamweight contender on your hands after this one.
Nice. And then the last fight on the main card, I laugh because it is the UFC's newest plaything, the hype machine, super shirtless, always shirtless Sage Northcutt, the -470 favorite, the largest favorite on the show. He's 2-0 in the UFC. He subbed Cody Pfister. He knocked out Francisco Trevino in his first UFC fight. He was the star of the first Looking for a Fight, the UFC Fight Pass show that we both like. He will be facing on short notice Brian Barberina, the +375 dog. He is 1-1 in the UFC, a loss to Chad Laprese by decision, and he knocked out Joe Ellenberger. Gumby, talk to us about this.
So, first of all, I want to go on record saying that when it was Andrew Holbrook who was supposed to be fighting Sage Northcutt, I was a little bit more intrigued. Holbrook had a win over Ramzi Nijem, who's a solid opponent, no longer with the UFC, but very solid opponent. And but Brian Barberina, a little bit weaker of an opponent. He's an MMA lab guy, so he trains out with Crouch and Benson Henderson. So really fun guy to watch. I think this is a little bit of a step down from Holbrook, and I think, you know, this is... They're playing Sage Northcutt up nicely.
Yeah, they're queuing him up for a win, right?
Yeah, I don't know if they're queuing him up for a win because that's really selling Barberina short. But they definitely are building him slower than the average person.
Well, I also thought that it was interesting because Barberina's—he's not like a submission expert by any stretch of the imagination, right? They wanted someone to stand and trade with Sage.
Yeah, I think that's true. Although I don't know what I know of his ground game. You know, Sage could have, you know, crazy jiu-jitsu for all we know. Have you ever seen it?
We saw flashes of it with... I mean, he subbed Cody Pfister, but yeah, I didn't think his jiu-jitsu looked particularly good. I thought it's something he had to work on.
So maybe that's... Well, I mean, his takedown defense was not good. That's what I remember. But yeah, I think this is one that you could comfortably pick Sage Northcutt and at the same time respect Barberina because this is going to be the best guy that Northcutt fought.
All right, well, I'll be a little bit of a TMZ gossip hound right now. I'm not going to use any names, but let's just say anonymous source, someone you and I both know that we train with, told me over the weekend that they got a call from the UFC. This person is a manager and someone in the know, let's call it. And the UFC asked, hey, do you know of anyone that could take this fight on short notice? And he brought up a local fighter that you and I both know and respect and who happens to be a good grappler. And the UFC said that sounds good. And the fight was, I guess you could call it, verbally booked for about 8 hours. And then they got the call the next day. and they were told, no, they're actually going to do a fight at 170, not 155. So that just kind of had alarm bells going off in my head. Like, what didn't they like about that fight? I mean, this probably happens all the time.
Yeah, it probably happens all the time, and we just don't. That's not one of the sources we have. But interesting that you pointed out, because I know what you're talking about. And maybe they are.
We sound so stupid right now, not throwing out names, but we can't to protect the innocent.
Yeah, yeah, we don't want to throw names out and make people look bad. But the grappling thing just definitely is in the back of my mind.
I also have to just wonder, you know, they've put so much into Sage, the 40-40 first fight out, the fight pass show built around him. Obviously, while Sage is unranked at 155, if you did a pound-for-pound list of UFC marketing, he's in the top 5, if not top 10.
I'd say top 10. Maybe yeah. Not top 5.
No, yeah, true.
Because there are at least 5 people who you could market to non-MMA fans.
Very true. He's not a household name yet.
He's not a Cowboy Cerrone. He's not a Ronda Rousey. He's not a John McGregor, Jones.
Right. But they're high on him. And, yeah. When I hear that and you see how much money is being put behind him on the marketing front, you have to figure when the matchmakers, Joe Silva, goes to make a match, they have to cross with what they expect out of him from the marketing dollars they've spent. They're not just going to feed him to Raging Al.
Yeah, Ally Aquinta. And we throw Ally Aquinta and Michael Chiesa in every lightweight matchup we're ever drawing.
Well, they're both, like, exciting fighters.
They're super fun to watch.
But it makes sense, too, because Ally Aquinta actually called out Sage Northcutt on Twitter, who's making fun of him all weekend.
You know who else called him out that I would really like to see, too? And we'll wrap this up pretty quickly.
Sure.
Is Kevin Lee. Kevin Lee coming off a loss, but if you don't know anything about Kevin Lee, wicked, wicked strong dude, very muscly powerhouse, and an excellent grappler. If you haven't seen any Kevin Lee fights, watch some Kevin Lee. And I know earlier, like a couple fights ago, he was calling out Sage Northcutt. I'd watch the hell out of it because I think that's the kind of step up Sage needs to prove himself. His marketability is going to be there regardless. But if we were talking about wanting to prove him, Kevin Lee would be the guy.
And you'd have to be kind of stupid as a UFC fighter not to be calling out Sage Northcutt right now because it's a fight that's going to get you attention. And it's all right, so with that being said, we will break down the rest of the card on the other end of the interviews. And Gumby, I want to play these interviews, but we can't just do it on our own.
Yeah, that's right. So we're going to go to Grappler's Toolbox. Grapplerstoolbox.com is the sponsor of our interviews this time. If you go to grapplerstoolbox.com and at the checkout you insert code MANIFESTO, you will get 15% off your entire order. And Grappler's Toolbox, it's just for you guys who don't know, it's like a man crate filled with all of your good grappling supplies that can come to you monthly.
Detergent, Sisu mouth guard.
Yeah, you can even
there.
Get a Sisu mouth guard in there, so you can go full circle on both of our advertisements by just heading over to grapplerstoolbox.com.
You can get it for yourself, you could send it to a friend of yours who grapples, but it is an awesome package full of everything you need to be a grappler.
That's correct.
So thank you, Grappler's Toolbox, for bringing our listeners these interviews. This is Dan Gumby Vreeland talking to Super Samoan Mark Hunt.
Hello, this is Dan Gumby Vreeland here today with Mark Hunt, who fights at Fight Night 84 in Brisbane, Australia on March 20th against Frank Mir. How you doing today, Mark?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on.
So, Mark, you're known to be one of the leading walk-off KO guys. Sometimes you hit that KO and you just walk right away like you know it happens. How do you know so easily that KO has gone as soon as you throw the punch?
Well, you just know. If you don't know, you don't know.
Fair enough. So, of all of those walk-off KOs, obviously you've got a fair bunch in your career. Do you have a favorite that you've hit?
No, I just like, when I know I got him, I just got him. That's it, basically. There's no favorite. Anyone's pretty good, so.
We found out that recently you decided to change your diet up, and the rumor is that you've gone vegan. Have you indeed changed your diet that drastically? And if so, how's that affecting your training?
Oh, I didn't say I was going vegan. I mean, people assumed that I was going vegan, but nope, I haven't gone vegan. I haven't even started being a vegetarian. I just commented on a video that I didn't like that was posted up. And I think all the vegetarians and vegans said that I was going vegan. So it never even said I was. So.
Ah, so that's just a little bit of the internet getting talking once they've heard something.
Yeah, that's the internet talking. So I think after I finish fighting it, maybe. But at the moment, I still love eating meat.
Me too. Getting into a little bit about your fight, you've been matched up with Frank Mir, another stellar headliner, big name headliner for you, in one of the places that you call home. What are your thoughts on Frank Mir as an opponent, and you know, how do you react to the booking?
Well, I did ask for someone higher, like JDS or Alistair Overeem, but I can only pick and choose who I fight. So, you know, but also, you know, Frank Mir has been, you know, the former UFC champion, so he's no slouch. So I said, yeah, okay, I'll take that fight, and it'll be good to, you know, I like Frank Mir, he's a nice guy. But this is what we got to do and try to get that title. So work is work, right?
Absolutely. And so you mentioned that getting towards that title again. At 41 years old, which is a little bit on the older side there for a fighter, how urgent does it feel for you to get the title now, like to go right after the big guys right now?
Well, I'm not getting any younger, but yeah, I'm not really complaining. I mean, I did want something a bit higher, but, you know, I can't really call for title shots if I haven't. You know, I lost to Stipe badly. You know, I haven't had a really good run. But, yeah, it's only just a matter of time to see how it works.
Got to
keep winning and keep moving on. That's how it works. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like you have a lot of time left to fight, or do you feel like you might be getting towards the end of your career?
Well, I can fight. In my mind, I can fight forever. You know, reality says I can't fight forever. But, I can't really, the body doesn't allow you to fight forever. So, but we'll see what happens and how it works out.
Awesome.
Still love what I do, and that's basically, you know, the idea.
Exactly. So you mentioned possibly getting a matchup with somebody like Overeem or JDS. Now, Overeem was a big Japan guy. You yourself, obviously, a big Japan guy. Has there been any interest in going back over to Japan for a fight?
To be honest, I don't know. I mean, there's always, it's for me, I think it's good to have a competition like a different organization. It doesn't, you know, having one organization is not good for fighters, especially, you know, when you're negotiating contracts and things and whatnot. But I still think it's a good idea. Another company's around, it gives our fighters options, whereas you can get work other places. I do think it's a good idea, of course. I've been spoken to about it, but yeah, let's see what happens. I still want to be the UFC champion, and I'm working towards that goal.
Yep. And as far as so, obviously, one of your former opponents is the leading reason that Japanese promotion is back, Fedor Emelianenko, back in the cage, so to speak. And if the fight were to arise, whether it's in the UFC or elsewhere, is that a fight you'd be willing to or be interested in taking somewhere down the road?
Well, of course. You know, I'm always into taking rematches. I've never lost a rematch, and I don't plan on losing any other rematch. So I'm always, any fight good for me. You know, we can party anywhere, as I say.
My next question is a little bit about out of the cage. So in September of 2015, this past September, you came out with a biography. I just picked up my first copy of it. I haven't gotten a chance to flip through it yet. But could you tell us a little bit about why you decided now to write a biography and a little bit of the thought process that went behind that?
Well, to be honest, I didn't even want to write a biography. I was... You know, Vanessa, the publisher, kept asking me, she's a really nice lady, so, you know, normally when people keep bugging me, I just kind of bear fault, but I don't know what was it about her that really appealed to me about her, but she's a nice woman, and she actually called me for the fourth time, and I was just about to tell her to F off, you know, but she did... because she's a well-spoken woman, and she just said, Mark, you know, with your story, you could help others. That's basically the reason why I wrote the biography. And it wasn't because, you know, it wasn't no financial gains or anything. It was to help other people in their journeys in life. And when you read the book, you'll understand what I'm talking about. So I've been reached out to a lot of fans and people. They see me about you know, how it's helped them with their lives and journey, and that was the whole idea of it, you know. So, yeah, so, you know, you can thank her for writing the biography, because I'm not interested to sharing my laundry out in the public, especially when it comes to my family life. It was kind of private, but when she did say I can help others, yeah, that's the reason why I wrote it. And the process of it was, you know, to be honest, I didn't finish school, so I didn't know how I was going to write a biography, but, you know, they appoint you a ghost writer, and he actually sits with you and has coffee and talks with you about everything, and then he puts the, you know, everybody you've talked to in your life about, when you've spoken to them, because everyone you've mentioned in your life, he goes and interviews them and gets their take on the times and the situations that's happened with your life, and then they put a timeline together, and that's pretty much how it ends up being a biography. So it's not just your talk, and it's everyone you've mentioned in your life. That's how it becomes. So easy. So yeah, it wasn't that hard. It was about 3 or 4 months while I was doing the CPAC camp, and you know, maybe I should have invested more time into the camp instead of talking to a freaking talking about my biography.
you mentioned that it was like a lot of talking and a lot of talking to your relatives too. At any point in time,
It wasn't me actually talking to a relative. It was actually
him
Ben talking to you, the ghostwriter talking to them. It wasn't me at all. It was actually him talking to them.
Yeah. Did that idea of Ben talking to, you know, members of your family, you know, your friends, was that like an uncomfortable piece, or was he like a really comfortable guy to work with?
Well, at start it was hard to work with anybody, because you know, just trying to share yourself and your life story is kind of hard with anybody. But you know, Ben's a really cool guy. I've gotten to really know him. I consider him a friend. He's a nice guy to work with, and I was able to share a lot of things with him. And you know, it was I think it's similar with my sister and my other family. It's easy to share with someone that you're comfortable with. So he's a really nice guy and a really honest person. So.
That's really, really awesome. So we're just about to the end of our 10 minutes here. Is there anything else you want to tell the fans about your upcoming fight or about your biography or what's going on right now?
Yeah, I don't know when it's going to be out in the States or over that side of the world, but you can buy a copy online, Born to Fight Online. It's doing pretty well. It's helping a lot of people during, you know, their own journeys in life. You can get it on Tinder, Amazon. Oh, not Tinder. Amazon.
You're going to find a whole different kind of book there.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I think because I got a friend that Tinder's a lot. That's I think it's called Tinder. Is it Tinder? Well, Amazon, and I think iTunes you can get it on as well. So he's not the Tinder of this guy. Anyway, you can find the book online, and if you have a I don't know when it's going to come out to your way for a hard copy, but you know, if you are struggling a little bit with your own lives, you know, maybe you can look into my life and maybe you can help you with your own. So, yeah. And, you know, tune into March the 20th. You know, Frank Murray, we're going to go to war and see if it's the end of the road for this journey. We'll see what happens.
Well, we can't wait to see it. And thank you for stopping by with us, Mark. We really, really appreciate it. And good luck with your training camp.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
So not only can you find love on Tinder, you could also find Marcon's book, Born to Fight.
So maybe don't go to Tinder to buy it, but definitely check out his book. Really interesting read. You can get it on Amazon.com. So find some time to go ahead and pick that up.
All right. So now we will cut to half an interview with Mike. Do not call him Michael Jackson.
Yeah, so let me give you a little bit about what he said before we cut to this interview, because, you know, we are losing a little bit, and I apologize again for that. So he's a really fun interview, great mic skills, very energetic. In the beginning, he talks a lot about how excited he is to have the opportunity. He even mentions that he thinks that Mickey Gall is a tougher out than CM Punk, and that he thinks once he gets through Mickey Gall, it'll be easy to get through CM Punk. He also talks a little bit about how he works for Legacy as a videographer. So he gives a little bit of his life background like that. But I think what you'll find in the rest of the interview is pretty interesting, too. He talks a little bit about the different places where he fights.
Awesome. So we will join your interview with Mike Jackson, already in progress.
I've covered events in Vegas. I've been to events as a fan in Vegas. So I know what to expect with the environment. This is something that I do. My life involves MMA, whether I'm fighting or I'm doing this from the media side of this. Mickey Gall, he hasn't experienced anything like this. He's fighting in bars in New Jersey or, you know, somewhere on the East Coast in front of a few hundred people. He doesn't know what the pressure's like to fight in front of this type of crowd with this many eyes watching him, as well as the cameras. I fought in front of cameras before. I fought in front of live television before. I've had cameras, you know, I've been in, there's a movie called Fight Bill that I was a part of that had cameras all around following me and things like that. So as far as that side, look, this is another day at the office. This is nothing new. I'm used to it. He's the one that's not. So there is no pressure for me. All the pressure lies on Mickey Gall.
Awesome. So to just kind of follow back in on some of those questions about CM Punk and Mickey Gall. So you said before that you thought Mickey Gall was the tougher of the two opponents. Now, what do you know about CM Punk's fighting style, and what do you know about what he brings?
His primary aspect of MMA that he's been training is his ground, is his jiu-jitsu. But even with that aspect, I'm better at the ground than he is. If I wanted to submit CM Punk, I can submit CM Punk, but that's definitely not my style. Every fight that I go into, I'm looking to knock someone out. All my three professional fights in boxing and kickboxing have all ended via knockout. And it's going to be no different for my next two upcoming fights versus Mickey Gall. That's going to end in a knockout. And when I fight CM Punk, that's going to end in a knockout.
So that for that first one, I know you said earlier that you would knock out CM Punk in under a round. Are we predicting that for Mickey Gall as well?
I predict a second round knockout versus Mickey Gall.
Got to feel him out first?
But yeah, that's actually my style. I'm more of a fill-out person, but I'm going to change it up a little bit for this one. We may see some things a little different in this one, but who knows? Maybe I may stick to the game plan, maybe I won't. But I definitely feel that he goes out within two rounds.
That's a hell of a prediction there. So just one more quick kind of fun follow-up question to this. So as a kid, we wanted to know, were you a professional wrestling fan? And if so, did you see any CM Punk fights?
Growing up, I was a professional wrestling fan. The only part that I really remember of CM Punk, I wasn't a fan, I wasn't an avid watcher of professional wrestling by the time he became part of the WWE. I do remember him in the ECW days, but vaguely a little bit. The things that I liked about CM Punk and the WWE side was I loved his promos that he did. I loved the shoot interviews that he did. He kept it real, and that's kind of like my style, you know. You just got to keep it real and just tell it like it is, and that's what he did, whether it be fiction or non-fiction.
Well, I would have to say in the short time we spent together today, you can definitely tell you're very comfortable around a mic as well. Before we wrap up here, is there anything you want to throw out to your fans before we let you go?
Not necessarily to my fans, but for those who don't know me, again, the people who know me on the nationwide level, they know me on the media side, you know, for those who do know me. But it's just, you know, people make sure y'all check me out at MikeTheTruth.com. That's my website. And it's not just MMA-based. It's really geared toward me. There was an article on MMA Junkie, and they mentioned that this may be the only MMA blog site that features burlesque. You know, I'm definitely a fan of women. I love women, all shapes and sizes and colors. But, yeah, make sure you check me out on there. Also, follow me on my social media, Twitter and Instagram. It's @TheTruthJackson.
All right. Well, we'll be sure to do that. And thank you very much for joining us, Mike. And we look forward to seeing that fight.
Thank you for having me. Y'all have a great day.
So Mike Jackson has a lot of personality.
Yeah, he is charismatic to say the least.
Very interesting to watch what happens with the whole CM Punk thing and who ends up fighting him and if it even happens.
I don't know how they sucked me into the storyline, but him on the mic definitely does that.
All right, let's break down the rest of the UFC on Fox card. We'll start with the FS1 prelims. I think the fight we're both most excited about, Tarek Saffiedin, the -245 favorite versus Jake Ellenberger, a +205 dog. Ellenberger, of course, coming off that vicious Stephen Thompson head kick KO. He is 1-2 in his last three fights. The one fight, a submission win over Josh Koscheck. I think that was that nasty rear naked choke, if I'm not mistaken. And then Saffiedin is 2-1. His last fight was a loss to Rory McDonald via TKO. No shame in that. How do you see this one playing out?
So Tarek is an interesting fighter. He's very, very tough, but he's also had quite a bit of time off after that McDonald loss. He's like I said, tough guy. I think the layoff's going to cost him here. And I know from a source of mine that Ellenberger is now training at King's MMA. There's been some pictures of him training there. There's a couple of reports of him training at King's MMA. To step up in training partners for him, and I think you're going to see the results in there. I'm going underdog again here. I'm going with Ellenberger.
All right, so if you were, as we like to say, parlay hunting Gumby, you like maybe you throw in four favorites or a three-fight parlay, you throw in two favorites, and then you would put Ellenberger in as your dog?
Yeah, so Ellenberger or Bader is my dog, and you might do one of each, but don't put them together. Putting them together, you're gonna bump your odds up crazy, but...
But if you're parlay hunting, I think both you and I align on the gambling strategy, go with one dog and a couple of favorites.
One dog, couple of favorites, either three or five fights, because those are the best player odds.
All right, moving on, you have a really fun prospect, actually. Trains out of TriStar, Olivier Aubin-Mercier.
OAM, as I call him, because I don't want to say that whole name.
-290 favorite versus Diego Ferrara, +245 dog. Mercier, 3-1 in the UFC, but a three-fight win streak, two submissions in those three in his last three fights. Carlos Diego, he is one win and two losses in his last three, the one win coming against Ramzi Najim. How do you see this one playing out?
I think this is OAM all day. I think this fight is kind of built for him. He's another one of those young guys they're building up, and I think his only loss is Chad Laprise on the Smashes final there. And I really do think that he is a big prospect that you're going to have to keep your eyes on. Laprise is good, but I don't think Laprise is better than him. He was just better that day. And I think they're almost feeding OAM one here. And I will use that term for this one.
Agreed. Then you have Rafael Natal, the -165 favorite versus Kevin Casey, a +145 dog. Natal is on a three-fight win streak. We talk about sometimes the sneaky win streaks that pop up. He just decisioned Uriah Hall in his very last fight for a win. Kevin Casey, a well-known grappler, he is 1-1 in the UFC. And how do you see this one playing out?
I do have to say that I'm pretty sure in there somewhere in that three-fight win streak, Natal has got a win that I don't agree with on the judges' scorecards.
Was that the Tom Watson one or the Chris Camozzi?
It might be Tom Kong Watson. I'm pretty sure I had that the other way. But in addition to that, I think this is going to be one of those fights that if you got to get up and get a beer... I think this is the one you pick because Casey's a hell of a grappler, but since he popped, he had positive test there. Since he's had that positive test, he's looked weak. He's looked a little on the old side. And Natal has kind of got a history of when he's stronger than somebody, just doing what he needs to get the decision. And I think that's what he's going to do right here, too.
A little bit of breaking news here. Sorry to interrupt the breakdown, but Josh Barnett is now tweeting out how he wants to give the fans something they remember and become the new 196 headliner. So he's really making his push on Twitter for him to face Stipe for an interim title. Just have to throw that in there.
Which in that case, you can completely throw away my talk about how he was going to beat Ben Rothwell, because it won't ever matter if that happens.
I mean, it's just a fighter politicking. No confirmation or anything, or that Dana White will just say, yeah, sure, here's your fight, kid, but just worth noting.
No shame in that.
Moving on, you have Dustin Ortiz. He's ranked number 9
He's a flyweight, yeah. 125.
125. He's the -220 favorite against Wilson Reyes, who's ranked number 12 at flyweight. Wilson Reyes is 2-1 in his last three, and Dustin Ortiz is 2-1 in his last three. What do you think of this fight, Gumby?
I think Ortiz is a legitimate title contender down there in Mighty Mouse's division, which doesn't have a lot of them. His wrestling is very, very good. People won't remember he out-grappled Ray Borg before Ray Borg started the incredible run he's on.
Resistance is futile. Yeah. I love the Borg.
Yeah, and Dustin Ortiz took down Joseph Benavidez twice in a fight. That is, there's not enough to be said for taking Joseph Benavidez down twice in a fight and still having no publicity to show for it. Wilson Hayes kind of historically not really great at taking takedown defense. So I think this is Dustin Ortiz's fight. You're going to see a lot of top game from him. You're going to see all that he has to offer. One to watch just so that you can see one of the future guys in that division.
I like it. And then you have Alex Caceres versus Massio Fullen. This is about the least exciting fight on the entire card. Caceres, the -290 favorite. Fullen is a +245 dog. Caceres is riding a 3-fight losing streak, and Fullen is 1-1 in the UFC. He has a win over Alexander Torres.
I think this is fun, but only because I love Bruce Leroy. Bruce Leroy is so fun to watch, and he's even more fun on the mic. He's a hell of a character if you remember him from that Ultimate Fighter season.
Sure.
That produced Michael Johnson, for instance. So, I mean, he's a fun guy to watch. And I think that this is their fight. After losing 3 tough ones in a row, including one against Faber, this is them being like, we're not going to fire you. Go beat this guy up, and we're going to take care of you.
You know, I just thought of it. You said his name. We would be remiss to not bring this up. But Michael Johnson has a fight booked for 197, and we didn't even talk about it.
Oh, right, yeah.
Tony Ferguson.
We'll talk about that after. That's for afterwards.
All right, fine. Gumby, you're such a strict... You're a stickler for format.
We'll talk about that in the divisions we can't handle.
Okay, I like it. So, rounding out the FS1 prelims, then you have George Sullivan, +110 dog, versus the -130 favorite Alexander Yakevlov. I know I did not say that right. Sullivan is 2-1 in his last 3, 3-1 in the UFC overall. And Alexander Yakevlov is 1-2 in the UFC, all going to decision, but he notably did beat Gray Maynard.
Yeah, and I think the takedown game of Yakevlov is probably going to beat George Martin. Or George, not George Martin.
That's, George Sullivan.
Yeah, George Martin is the Game of Thrones guy. That is wrong. George Sullivan, yeah. And if George Sullivan can fend off the takedowns, his stand-up game is good enough to beat Yakevlov, but he's going to have to defend a lot of takedowns. I'd probably take Yakevlov if I was being safe.
All right, so you're saying winter is coming for George Sullivan, not George Martin, and you're picking Yakevlov. Fight Pass prelims, one that I think I'm pretty excited about, Matt Dwyer and Randy Brown, because Randy Brown is, of course, from the Looking for a Fight episode 2. He's a prospect out of... do you remember what...
was it CFFC?
Yeah, I think it was CFFC. He's 6-0 as a pro, and he's fighting Matt Dwyer, who's 1-2 in the UFC. Matt Dwyer is the +170 dog. Randy Brown, making his UFC debut, is a -200 favorite.
Yeah, I think... So I watched a little footage on Randy Brown, because, you know, the highlights on Looking for a Fight, maybe not enough to make a decision about him. I think his punches come from too wide, and I think it's going to get him in trouble against higher-level competition. Not that CFFC doesn't have some really good guys in it, but I think in what I've seen from him, he's like a high-pressure, high-energy, fight-forward kind of guy, and he throws winging punches. Definitely fun to watch, but you forget Dwyer's the guy who threw that Superman punch KO.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if he's just being smart, and he's really long, he's like 6'4", which is huge for that division, you know, I think Randy Brown is being overhyped, and it might come back to bite him here, too.
Okay, so that might be another little gambling insider tip from Gumby, which is maybe Matt Dwyer as the dog right there.
I would think Matt Dwyer. He's fun to watch. He's way more technical. Randy Brown seems like he's thrown a lot of wide punches, and I think he gets stung on him.
All right, very interesting. And then you have Damon the Leech Jackson, the +255 dog, going against the -310 favorite in Levon the Hornet Makhchveli. I love the nicknames here, the Leech versus the Hornet. Makhchveli is 1-1 in the UFC. He's coming off a decision loss to Hasran Diaz. And Damon Jackson is 0-2 in the UFC, both losses via the sub. What do you think of this one?
I like Jackson, but I think this has got takedowns all day for the Hornet. Makhchveli, really, really, really good with his takedowns. Jackson hasn't shown very much takedown defense. I think it's a lay and pray game all day.
And then rounding out the fight pass prelims, you have Tony Martin against Felipe Oliveira. Tony Martin, 1-3 in the UFC. He's coming off a submission loss to Leonardo Santos versus Felipe Oliveira, making his UFC debut. He is 14-4 as a professional and off a 3-fight win streak. He's from Brazil.
Yeah, he's kind of fun to watch, too. Really, really strong knockout power. If this stays on its feet, expect fireworks, because he can throw bombs, and I think that this is how it's going to go. Tony Martin kind of getting a last chance to save his contract here, and Oliveira might just put him out of his misery.
Just to round this out, Gumby, as far as dogs go, you definitely like Matt Dwyer.
I like Matt Dwyer. I like Ryan Bader. And the third one I said was...
Was it George...
No, it was Jake Ellenberger.
Jake Ellenberger.
Jake Ellenberger, yeah. So, okay. I mean, all three of them... legitimate dogs, and there's a couple others in there that I wouldn't mind, but those ones particularly.
All right, I like it. So that does it for the breakdown, and now we will move to the question of the day, which was something I was just thinking about over the weekend, which is, someone puts a gun to my head, I'm on a desert island, I don't really know what the setup is, but I can only watch one weight class the rest of my life. So meaning that whenever a UFC fight card is on, Fight Pass, Fox, a pay-per-view, I have to look away during all fights except the weight class I pick. What do you choose? What's your favorite weight class? And for me, it's welterweight. I find welterweight fights to always be the most exciting. It's where GSP is. He's my favorite fighter of all time. Maybe it's something because I walk around myself in the 170-pound range, so I just identify with that weight class, even though I know those guys are cutting down sometimes from as much as 205 or even 215 if you're Johnny Hendricks. But that's a weight class that I've been watching, you know, basically my whole life as a fight fan, and that's my favorite weight class.
I think I'm going to go a little bit different, and I'm going to say from my history as a fight fan, it's always been 185 pounds for me. It's always been the middleweights. From when I started watching fighting, one of my favorite fighters way back in the day was Chris Lieben. Mm-hmm. Love Chris Lieben. And now I'm a big Luke Rockhold guy. I know you're a big Chris Weidman guy, but I'm a big Luke Rockhold guy. You got Jacare in there, who I love his jiu-jitsu. Gegard Mousasi is fun to watch. Machida fights down there. You might see Shogun down there sometime. You still get the chance to see Dan Henderson.
So, okay, but devil's advocate. So right now, yes, middleweight is very competitive, but even historically you feel that and moving forward? Because I just feel like, you know, me and you were talking about it, 155, 170, there's a million guys. The 155 and 170, to me, always has the most talent.
I would say that that's true, but if you watch, I would say if you watch the like early prelims to 185 guys, I bet you see more knockouts than 55. I bet you see more subs, because as you get up in divisions, more knockouts, more subs. And if I'm going to watch all of those fights that are early on the card all the time, and I do, but if I only got a chance to watch one division's worth,
you go 185.
Probably 85.
But I'm even this is, again, I'm just kind of thinking out loud, like historically, you think of like just the classic battles with Hughes and GSP, throwing BJ Penn and GSP when they were at 170 during the first one, and then on down the line with even what we just saw now, Lawler-Condit, Lawler-Rory McDonald, Diaz versus Condit, these are some of the best fights in UFC history, and I feel like at middleweight, you know, I guess there's Silva. I mean, listen, that's kind of unfair because Silva just dominated. I just think there's been more parity, I guess, at welterweight.
Yeah, I guess I would agree with you. There's definitely more parity, but I don't know if you put a gun to my head and tell me that I can't see Silva fight ever again, or I'm going to miss out on, like, you know, Luke Rockhold beating the hell out of Vitor Belfort in a rematch, or, you know, I have to watch, you know, Silva's crane kick. Come on, you lose Silva's front kick to Vitor's face. You're going to tell me I lose? I went nuts when Silva front kicked him in the face and he, like, fell on himself and drooled.
Yeah.
You can't miss that fight. I just think there are too many fun athletes at that weight class.
Okay.
That they're too fun to watch.
Fair. I just, for me, it's definitely 170. I don't even really think twice about it. I think the thing I thought about was actually 155, maybe. Again, maybe I just like the lighter weights.
Do you know what I thought about for a second? I thought heavyweight for a second. And here's why. Listen, you got to hear why. I like it because you see that great thing. You mentioned it last week. We see either something amazing that you'll never see again.
Or the most boring fights you're ever going to have to sit through.
Yeah, but sometimes even those great things happen on the early fights. Did you see, I'm going to say this wrong. I believe he's from Cameroon. Francis Ngannou made his debut at heavyweight probably 3-4 fight cards ago. First fight on the UFC prelims. Amazing knockout. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, wow, I'm so glad I caught the first fight pass
you
fight.
You definitely get that at heavyweight.
And you get that at heavyweight. You also get fights like Gabriel Gonzaga versus who was the Russian guy he fought recently. That was just atrocious.
Mind-numbing. And that's to me, I think, I wouldn't go 125. I wouldn't go heavyweight just because of those kind of reasons. To me, it's going to be something in the middle anyway. So for me, it's 170. For Gumby, it's 185. Gumby, we have not said it all show. How can the fans reach out to us? It's topturtlemma@gmail.com is the email address for the show. Topturtlemma@topturtlemma is the Twitter. How can they get in touch with you and your various writings?
They can get at me at Gumby Vreeland on Twitter, and that's Vreeland. And they can also check out all of the articles, up-to-date news at MMA Manifesto. That's MMA-manifesto.com. And yeah, click follow. Make sure you check out our articles. Tweet us out if you like us.
And when it comes to the podcast, you can catch us on iTunes, Stitcher.
You should definitely hit over on Stitcher. Stitcher, great way to follow your favorite podcasts. And we're now on Stitcher. You can check us on iTunes. You can use SoundCloud if you'd like to. You can check us out right on MMAManifesto.com. There's a whole bunch of ways you can get at us, so use your favorite.
All right. Well, that about does it for us.
Do you want to, right before we cut this out, do you want to quickly touch on Tony Ferguson?
Oh, yeah.
Because we love, here at Top Turtle MMA, we love Tony Ferguson.
All right.
We like it known.
So we'll end on this. I think the initial reaction when it was announced that Tony Ferguson would fight Michael Johnson.
It's what the fuck, right?
Right. Because Tony Ferguson on a 7-fight win streak, if not an 8-fight win streak, but I think a 7-fight win streak at 155. And he's fighting Michael Johnson, who's on a 2-fight losing streak.
And he's only doing it so he can stay busy and beat up Michael Johnson, who beat him.
I mean, I think from what I was reading online, too, his wife is due to give birth in the spring, so he wanted to fight before that happened. And I guess the only person willing to sign was Michael Johnson. But I think where the discrepancy comes from in the fans' mind is you get excited about Tony Ferguson, his push to the title, and you think about, okay, who can he fight to get in that title contention? Because we said it last time that we thought he was a title contender.
I thought he's already there. I don't think he had to fight anybody.
Right. He could have sat on the shelf and waited to see what happened with RDA versus Connor. But even if he didn't, you have to think, okay, does he fight Eddie Alvarez? Or maybe he fights Pettis off the loss just to get that extra big-name fighter. And instead he ends up with Michael Johnson?
And nothing away from Michael Johnson. I always say nothing away because they're elite-level fighters too. But
yes.
But Michael Johnson right now shouldn't be in the same conversation with Tony
Ferguson. Michael Johnson does have a win over Tony Ferguson, which was the other reason I think Ferguson wanted it, was to avenge the loss. But this is – we're talking a couple years ago at this point.
And he just looked really ugly against Diaz. And not that Diaz isn't good either, but like – you can't look that ugly and then come off a guy who looked like a killer his last time out.
I think, again, where the fans come into this who are on the Tony Ferguson war wagon, it's very risky for him. Because if Michael Johnson does win, does he start over now?
There's no upside to this fight at all.
Right.
Not for him.
Right. So, okay, I'm glad we got that in.
I'm really glad I got that off my chest because, man, that fight making just made me so mad.
Okay, so can I end the show now and can we go to open mat?
You can end the show now.
Awesome. All right. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. Hit us up on the Gmail, topturtlemma@gmail.com. Hit us up on the Twitter, topturtlemma or @topturtlemma. I always forget the @ when I'm talking about Twitter. But as they say in MMA, when you get to the top turtle position, you should always be looking to finish. We are Top Turtle, and we are finished.